Okay, thanks for everyone for being here. I really appreciate the support for everyone. Thank you, Joan and Jimmy, for allowing me this opportunity. Thanks to Robert Gibb for all of his encouragement over the years, and thank you, Christina, my wife, for all of her love and support. So I'm going to be reading from my chapbook, Argot, tonight. I'm going to be starting off reading some restaurant poems. Jimmy had a nice segue there to indeed tip your servers, and then I'm going to move on to some other things. So, I keep things within the time limit. Jose at the Yum Yum Cafe. Jose stir fries a blistering wok of lo mein, an illegal cooking the Szechuan dish for sweatshirted undergrads who slurp their noodles through chopsticks while he works over blue-flamed burners in a steamy kitchen. The steady heat of gas stoves like a rippled current of manual days and long labor. Over a joint at my girl's apartment, he will share his broken English journey. From a Costa Rican village to border crossing, for $1,000 he was smuggled in the back of aluminum U-Hauls. Jose spent the brutal Houston summers landscaping beneath a heavy-handed sun, scrubbed dishes in 100 Chicago eateries, then came to Pittsburgh's gray shores of opportunity. Maybe his America is now a cold-blooded embrace or a soggy foot. Maybe it's a wink, a paycheck under the table, tenement rent deducted from a non-negotiable wage, one nation united in its willingness to give him a bite, if only it can take its own bite back. Before I moved to New Orleans, Jose asked my help learning English. He wants to enroll in college. My time short, I give him a book of poems, Bukowski lifted from a bookstore in my baggy pants, thinking that it will be helpful, an amusing way to learn the syntax of broken promises and understand a language of despair. But he already understands. So perhaps the pages will collect dust and needless folds among diasporas of Latin American dreams, that he will prefer to salsa dance on his rare time off, maybe at the Cozumel on Tuesday nights, with its specials on Cuervo and Corona and breathless partners spun into tops. This next poem, Argot, is the title poem of the chapbook. For those of you that don't know what the word argot means, it's a specialized language, much the way that maybe jazz musicians or restaurant servers might speak to each other. Argot. In the sweaty restaurant kitchen, where I'll learn to cuss in Mexican, tattooed line cooks talk shit in voices nicked as the bone-white monkey bowls we stack and fill. They call the boss and picky customers chupacabra, goat sucker being the inside joke for every pain in the ass. Years ago, in a place once a mustard factory, I was a boy touring mom's latest food prep gig, a windowless world where the clam chowder paddled around in vats deep enough for me to stand. And I wore a paper hat, same as the mustached men in bloody aprons who cut up and kitted while they hacksawed T-bones from beef sides. Now, I dig 12-hour grooves of full trays and spaghetti joints with family names. I keep ice bins full and counters clean, wondering at times if the routine has replaced the oxygen of my dreams with a working life that takes what it wants, stealing my pen and handing me bad math on credit slips. On her days off, Mom wants to play Scrabble, but instead we talk about our fingers, how they've split into open-flowered nerves, stinging our bodies to the bulk of a weary self at the end of the day, each of us searching for the phrase that captures what it is to feel at once both capable and small. A couple of more restaurant poems. Waiting for rain. Ice pails air dry on a stainless ledge while we servers hungry and hungover, hustle for an always early lunch crowd of middle-aged kids escorting creased-cheeked women, wheeling their walkers white-knuckled. Small feet and canvas keds shuffle over leaf-print carpet like delicate wind-up toys, cogs and gears turning. We move like bees, table to table, keeping the coffee filled, clearing the dirty china. Wary of their delicate bones, we try to tread lightly in heavy black shoes. To know this life as a parade of Sundays is to begin an education in a culture of demand, topping off the half-empty glasses of the dry-mouthed as if the water pitcher we lug about the dining room is a full cloud and the thirsty must wait, like dry plants waiting for rain, their roots buried in sand. One more restaurant poem. Scraping away. Once, when we were new, a plate of seafood crashed to the kitchen tiles and became the first scallops some of us had ever tried. Scraping away the broken to save the unscathed, we chewed briny mouthfuls of gritty, sweet meat, swimming in a sniff of garlic and white wine, thinking nothing ever tasted so good. As that moment passed into sounds of clinking silverware and carrying on, while Perry Como sang overhead, imploring us to learn the mambos to and fro, a lesson we'll soon take to humming, in a heaping world that needs us to believe we can be oceans pushing waves toward a shoreline we can't see, the worn down, far off places of ourselves. Thanks. And I'm just going to finish up with three other favorites. A lot of my students seem to like this poem, Napalm Summer. I made napalm all July of that restless summer I turned 14. After joyrides in Mom's Malibu fail to hold their thrill. After the redhead from up the street invites some of us guys to watch porn while she babysits, and I'm the only one who shows. So when she hits play on the VCR, I believe it's adulthood I'm entering as the bathroom-stashed copy of Taboo rolls over grainy tape heads to reveal Oedipal overtones in a film where it's stage-named cast with piston hips and bouncing breasts turn scenes of penetration into moments that leave me dry-mouthed and breathless. Flesh on flesh and throaty animal moans fill the on-screen action, but on the finer points of passion and position, I'm too callow to make a first move. And having never kissed a girl yet, nothing happens until I'm left with a bike ride home and shorts full of throb. The rest of that sticky month, I slice Dial soap into metal buckets of gasoline that leave my basement reeking of fumes as the mixture jellies beside the mower. At dusk, I set fire to an open field, try to turn desire into ash, but melt the soles of my checkered Vans, trying to slow the hasty burn down to a safe smolder where flames flicker and tongue the dry grass, like a want needing to engulf me whole. Thanks. This next one's about a punk club, punk. I keep embarrassment in a stash stacked and piled like yellowed news in cracked plaster rooms off behind the kitchen table of my mind, a place to visit my drunken faux pas, file away the fuck-ups, and feel bad about the time I hit an old woman in the mouth with a jar full of maraschino cherries. Sometimes I thumb through to that time when Leo and I were 16 and we sat parked for hours in front of the electric banana. A punk club will never go inside out of fear our night might end in a busted nose from a swirling mosh pit full of knees. our missed chance to stomp and bleed on a sticky dance floor still jangles like loose change and a pocketful of sad attempts to fit in. But it's only after Leo's blonde hair is lost to glue and malt liquor in a botched attempt at dreadlocks, after he buzzed it close to the skull and we lose touch, that I'll come to know so well those minor threat cassettes that click in a dusty Delco tape deck while we watch the Iron City punks loiter about the banana's front door in their comfortable mohawks and effortless combat boots. Marooned and sober behind a foggy windshield, a lush hillside fails to take shape. And I find that, years later, I'm a self full of deeds undone, going places where so much is an idling Chevy with a paint job the color of contusion. And I'm going to finish with this last poem for an old friend of mine I haven't seen in a long time. I hope he's doing okay. Demetrius's glasses. All the girls on acid, sitting cross-legged on the carpet of his unfurnished bedroom, would try them on. Thick lenses with brown plastic frames. His glasses could amplify the best hallucinations. Demetrius moved from the Y to sleep in a house of misfits and stoners. Sometimes he would vanish. We all feared daylight back then, not looking much beyond months emptied of their useless laughter. In those days, we looked shady, dressed in yellow, pasta power t-shirts, busboys at Spaghetti Warehouse, smoking joints in alleys between double shifts. The passing dog walkers never said a word. We haven't hung out for years. It's hard to know what to say now that he's blind. I remember slipping on those glasses, their magnified blur. Remember feeling helpless, the way he must feel in the dark and without them now. Thanks so much.